Chapter 8. Only one uniformed security guard accompanied Time and her supporter, who was wearing a dark, obviously tailored suit rather than her interrogator's drab uniform, on a short walk followed by a long elevator descent. As they went along, and then descended, with the guard trailing a few steps behind, the man introduced himself as Wyler Arenetti, and explained that he was but one of a number of voices in the matter at hand. Though he believed her story, was fascinated and wanted to hear more, he cautioned her that it would be an incredibly hard sell to most of the rest. In other words, destination reached, yes, mission accomplished, no. In fact, Arenetti gave the impression that the mountain still lay ahead.
There's one I can probably convince now that I have you to attest to the legitimacy of my theory, he said. The rest are a whole different story. Especially Gogman. He'll be the hardest sell of all.
They seemed to descend endlessly. But then again, the freight-sized elevator itself didn't seem to be about rapid transport. At last, they stopped and the doors opened.
We're about 10 miles underground,
Arenetti said as he gestured for her to step out into yet another long corridor that loomed ahead of them.
The whole place is powered by geothermal energy, which is only rational when you're so far down you can all but hear the flow of magma.
He explained that long ago the place had been hewn out quite carefully. The process had taken decades even with the tech they'd used. He didn't mention magma cars or trains or whatever they were, but implied the equivalent. When they'd hollowed out the deep crust down to where the rock itself was heating up from what lay below, they put down a barrier that not only kept the heat out of the facility, but was able to digest that heat and convert it into energy to power the whole place, which, from the looks of it, was at least the size of a small town. Yet another long stroll ensued, but this one featured a dead end that looked like a planetarium dome. Arenetti escorted her to the middle of the room, which appeared to be even more furniture-free than Asher the interrogator's office, and brought them to a halt there. Time looked around. There wasn't much to see.
You know how usually the most dangerous place to be is under whatever it is that's scary, Arenetti said, drawing Time's gaze back to meet his own. Well, this is that rare exception.
Before she could ask what he meant, he spoke more loudly, as though addressing the room, which was basically what he was doing.
Recognize voice Arenetti, Wyler Tiberius. Activate neutralization field and safety protocols. Retract shielding.
Arenetti, Wyler Tiberius, recognized. Activating.
A decidedly robotic voice said from somewhere. There were no speakers evident any place around them.
Shielding, retracting.
Not sure I like the sound of that, Time said.
No danger, just that the N field can only provide shielding for a few minutes at a time, before the whole thing gets too hot. But while it's up, it will do every bit as good a job as what's over us right now.
She saw him tilt his gaze up at the 8-wedge ceiling, and her focus went there as well. The wedges were withdrawing, opening what at first was a star-shaped gap filled with radiant light, whose hues alternated from one moment to the next through what appeared to be the entire spectrum. The wedge panels continued to retract, the arms of the glowing octopus-shaped gap thickening as the centre expanded. Time was awestruck. But then again, even Arenetti himself seemed mesmerised by what was going on about half a mile over their heads. There was a black hole up there. Hundreds of yards across. That's what it appeared to be. A perfect void. Even had a rainbow event horizon. Black on black, it wouldn't have been visible at all had it not been for the plasma-like web of light-emitting energy that encircled it, constantly undulating as the colours moved around like the aurora borealis. These scintillating hues even faintly coloured the grey walls of the massive containment, but the aura wasn't potent enough to reveal much detail.
"The experiment you're supposed to stop has been going on for a while," Arenetti said. Many years, actually. A major impediment to you selling your story is that, so far, it's been working beautifully.
He told her that despite the apparent absence of light up there, what lay beyond and around the phenomenon was nearly as dark as the thing itself. The space was filled with energy, both above and below the visual waveband.
"It's truly our child," Arinetti said. "Well, theirs, that is. I wasn't around for the birth, but it's mine as well now. I've adopted it, despite my misgivings."
Time couldn't seem to take her eyes off it. With the energy shielding in place but nothing physical, no glass or plexiglass intervening, it felt like she could reach up and touch those hypnotically dancing colours surrounding the ominous sphere of absolute darkness.
"What is it?"
"A child, like I said. An infant, actually. Oh, it's not alive. I'm just going with the appropriate metaphor based on its stage of existence. I don't think it feels, or thinks, or knows."
"You don't think?"
"Can we ever be sure of anything?"
Their eyes met, hers diverting from the light show overhead for the first time. His smile was somehow reassuring.
"What do you think you're seeing?" he said.
That diverted both their gazes back up to the almost indescribable phenomenon.
"I don't know, it's so dark. A black hole?"
"And the answer is, sort of."
Her head turned and their eyes locked again.
"It's actually what we call a realm interface. You know the theories that there are other realities parallel to our own? Well, we believe that's what's up there, an entrance to one."
"What kind of other reality?"
"That's what we don't know. And funny thing about all this is that we've just now finished building the exploration craft. We're getting ready to send someone into it to find out."
Time's eyes lit up. The escort guard had stayed at relaxed attention beside the lone entrance. Glancing over his way, she saw he was watching the admittedly hard-to-resist light show. She turned back to Arinetti, eyes still wide.
"That's got to be it," she said. "Sending the ship in must be what Albert wanted me to stop."
"That's the trick, as I said."
Arinetti tried to offer her another reassuring smile.
"My believing your story can at best delay the inevitable. They want to see what's through that door. And after generations have toiled down here to get that chance, we're ants trying to hold back an avalanche."
"Could be worse," Time said. "We could be grasshoppers. They wouldn't even try."
Arinetti almost grinned. He ordered the room's unseen controller to close the ceiling panels, and the robotic voice acknowledged and complied. Given the same leeway again by the lagging guard, he and Time went back down the hall toward the elevator. There were only a handful of doors along the way, she noticed, these being of the double variety and without windows or anything except numbers at the tops of their frames.
"Did Dredge get this tour too?"
Time said, when she'd worked up enough nerve. By then they were almost to the elevator.
"His name is Leonardo Berwin Dupree."
She turned and saw him suppressing a smile.
"Ouch," she said.
"Okay, Dredge it is."
"They're just holding him until they sort you two out," Arinetti said. "If you hadn't had those little toys with you, they'd have already rinsed you out and dropped you back topside."
"Rinsed me out?"
"Removed your memories. Yeah, they can do that and probably still will. So enjoy this while you can, because when it's over, odds are you're going to find yourself back in that car you drove to Goldstone wondering how long you've been asleep. And it'll turn out to have been days."
He seemed to have expected her distraught look.
"Sorry," he said. "I'll do what I can, but that's SOP these days. Around the whole subterranean scene. If they see stuff, erase it. Bodies can be hidden easily enough, but they tend to leave trails, and missing persons with amnesia makes for a better solution."
"Bodies?"
"This isn't breaking into the Smithsonian after hours,"
Arinetti said as the elevator ascended.
"And you brought things with you that are definitely not what the curiously innocent tend to carry with them when they're storming some ultra-secret facility."
"Okay, first off, I don't think two people can really storm anything, can they? And we came trying to help." "That's second off, I guess. And third off is that I only had those gadgets on me because they gave me a chance to get to someone who might listen to what I was supposed to tell them."
"Well, mission accomplished. I'm the best you've got. and maybe all you've got on the listening end, but we'll do everything we can to sell the tale and go from there.